Lately, there have been some reports of UFOs, unidentified flying objects, in South America and in Europe. So we thought we'd find out this morning about UFO activity in Canada, the sightings, the encounters, the research. Stan Friedman is a physicist in Fredericton. Bud Hopkins is an artist by profession, a ufologist by inclination. He's in New York, and here in Toronto is Charlotte Brown. Hello to you all.
Hi, Peter.
Hello, Peter.
Hello there.
Thank you for coming in. Charlotte, I'll start with you, if I may. Tell me about your experience. Now, you've had two, right?
Yes, I have.
Tell me as much as you want me to know.
Well, my first experience was in 1947. I was not quite nine.
Mm-hmm.
I was asleep at home. I was in a small farm. And
this here in Ontario?
Muskoka.
Muskoka, okay.
I was awakened with the urge that I had to go down to a nearby field, which was part of the farm. And I went out through the kitchen. The time on the clock was 10:10. And I went down across a swampy area and into the field where there was what looked like a very bright light. And there was no sounds, you know. There was no cricket sounds, no normal country outdoor sounds for the time of night. And I was compelled to go to the light. And as I got closer, I could see that it was just a doorway. And around behind that bright light, there was a very large craft of some kind, about I would guess 30 by 30 feet. There was a small being at the door who gestured for me to come in. And then I went in. There was no verbal communication. It was mental. I could hear what he was thinking.
You could understand what he was thinking.
Yes. He directed me to a small table. Which, similar to an ironing board that comes out of the wall, that long, narrow, unsupported underneath. And I was instructed to get up on that. I disagreed, and I was trying to fight them off. And they just put their hand on me, and I was on the table. I was lifted up, and I was down flat with no further argument. I couldn't move. They examined me. There was a scraping taken from my arm. They inserted a small a probe of some kind into my abdomen, right about the navel. It looked like a long needle. And they also inserted a little burr. It looked like a burr, a little metal piece, up into my nose, up into the membranes behind my nose.
Do you know why they were doing this, or did they?
They said it would make it easier for contact again.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was going to die. The noise of it going in through the membrane in my head, it was just horrendous.
Was this an unpleasant experience, an unpleasant memory for you? It doesn't sound. This is not.
It took me many years to get to this point, I'd say. For many years, I was even afraid to walk by the area where I had met them.
This happened when you were just before you were nine.
Yeah.
And how long did the whole thing last?
3 hours. I got back at 2:10.
Now you said it took you years. Did you remember everything that happened to you at that time? Because this is something else I want to get into.
I had all external memories and. As a child, I had quite a bit of the internal, as in the craft.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, I've tried very hard to forget it because, I was quite afraid of it.
And it happened to you again at another point.
Yes, when I was 15.
About approximately the same thing, same series of events.
Similar. This one, the second one, was a daytime sighting or abduction. I don't know what you'd call that. I was on the way home from school at an early let out, and The craft was in an area probably 300 yards from the original place. It was sitting down. There was a being on the outside in a sort of a coverall, white coverall, covered his head. Not too dissimilar.
How big was this being?
Oh, 4'3", 4'6" maximum. Quite a bit smaller than I was at 15.
Mm. And were you taken into the craft again the second?
Yes, I was.
I want to maybe get some more details as we go, but I want to hear from the other two people who are here. But you just said sighting or abduction. Are those words used interchangeably?
No.
No.
Who said no?
Stan Friedman said no.
Stan, what was it then? What is it that Charlotte?
No, abduction is. I would certainly call it an abduction, not just a sighting. And the important thing here for your listeners, and I'm sure Bud will enlarge upon this, is that experiences like Charlotte's, just as strange as they might sound to somebody who's never heard of them, are much more common than we'd like to think. The numbers that we know of are certainly in the hundreds. And as you can imagine, those of us with a serious interest in flying saucers are much more interested in cases like Charlotte's than of lights in the sky. She may not have any physical evidence of what happened. I don't know. I'm anxious to hear the rest of the story myself.
Well, so am I, but I'm going to just hold on to that for a sec because I want to set this in as much context as I can. Stan, have you ever had this kind of experience yourself?
I have not had such an experience. I have dealt with a number of abductees, yes.
Okay, Bud, have you?
That's actually the area that I spend my time investigating. And I've worked with 120 abductees at this point.
120 people who have had experiences that are
extraordinarily similar to this.
Uh-huh.
And they usually happen first when the person is a child, starting at, let's say, 5 to 9 or 10. And then there's usually a second abduction during puberty, during adolescence. And then very often there are still others that happen later. The description of something that was put up the nostril and the abdomen and so forth, these descriptions are extremely similar. And I was going to ask just one other question of Charlotte.
Sure.
Was there any kind of incision or cut that you remember from the first experience on some part of your body, perhaps your leg or something like that?
From the second one, I had one on the back of my leg, but it is no longer there. I've looked for it.
Right. We have, I've worked with now maybe, and photographed perhaps 30 of these scars. And
where are the scars usually, sorry?
They're usually on the back of the leg, sometimes on the front of the leg. They're always, they conform to one of two patterns. They're either a straight line, like a very thin surgical cut, or there's a little kind of circular scoop, as if a little tiny ice cream scoop took a layer of flesh, and there is... Those are usually, say, a quarter of an inch or 3/8, something like that, in diameter. And they continue as a shallow depression.
What about, Charlotte, I can't wait to find it. Do you have a mark on your abdomen where the probe was?
Not that I would be able to.
I wasn't going to ask you to see it. No, but I'll take your word for it.
I don't. It would not have been more than, I suppose, a large needle. You don't have scars from where you get blood removed.
Before we get some more content, tell me this little burr of metal up the nose.
That's kind of interesting because it was the instrument that put it in, and to me it looks like a very slender needle nose plier, and it went up into the nose, and this horrendous tearing sound. But about 5 years ago, I had a very, very bad cold, and I sneezed it out.
And it puked around the world?
It came out in my Kleenex.
You didn't keep it?
I kept it. I put it in a little special little container I had for little odd things. Anyway, I couldn't remember at the time what it was, but it was a little calcified burr. It was still pin-sized, but it was covered over with what looked like... hard water you would get in the bottom of your kettle.
Right.
That sort of consistency.
And where is it now?
A good question. I have not been able to find it, but I had three children who used to rummage in my little box for different things. So,
Stan,
I imagine.
What about the thing up the nose? What is that?
I would suspect it's either the equivalent of a monitoring signal. a device to give off a signal of some kind that can be observed from a distance. In other words, a very miniature device so that you can get back to your specimen if you're doing a longitudinal study, and perhaps with coded in such a way that you know who the specimen is. That's the only thought that comes to mind. Now, one could go a step further, of course, and suggest that it's recording data of some kind and, you know, a lot of data storage. And if you look at the direction of our miniaturization and allow for another million years to go by or so, Lord knows what information is embodied.
We haven't got one of these things.
But do you know of any?
But have you ever seen one?
No, I haven't. If I had, it would be big news.
but you do. There is a pattern of them them having
been. Now, I should point out, Peter, that there is a pattern of them being removed also. Now, there's strong possibility, of course, if you want to get paranoid about the whole thing, that this could also represent a means let's say, putting information or whatever into the brain as well as removing it. Anything is possible. But the point is that when you have, let's say, 20 people, and I should also point out that a number of these people describe the needle going in below the eyeball or into the ear cavity rather than in the nose. In all three cases, you're getting close to the brain, though. But the point is, if you have, say, 30 cases where these things are described, the psychiatrist and psychologist who I've worked with in all these cases have said this is just not a fantasy that's viable in outside the range of the paranoid population. And we've done extensive psychological tests on 10 different abductees and have precluded any possibility of paranoia being involved. But the point is that it's not a fantasy that has any glamour attached to it. It's a kind of a horrifying fantasy. The psychological testing project, I should mention, though, we took 10 abductees, one of whom was a chemist who owned his own chemical testing company, one was a securities analyst, a college professor, et cetera, et cetera. I have three PhDs who are abductees, incidentally.
That's no proof of anything, but...
Of course it is, and I understand. But the point is that we gave them the full battery of psychological tests, diagnostic tests, administered by a psychologist who was not told that this had anything to do with UFOs at all.
Mm-hmm.
And we just said we were looking for any patterns in this particular sample group, this blind test.
Yeah.
And there was no paranoia, schizophrenia, no heavy-duty mental illness with any of them. But she pointed out that they had shared certain deficits, which everyone turns up with deficits on these tests, the MMPI and the Rorschach.
What's a deficit?
TAT. That's the term they use for when you score low in a certain area. Or, you know, all of them had a somewhat lowered self-esteem or self-image. All of them showed a certain degree of hesitancy to trust other people, to make commitments, and caution around other people.
Uh-huh.
And the third was a certain distrust of one's own body and one's own physicality.
Now, would your analysis be that that's a result of the early experiences?
Well, she pointed out when she was finally told after she'd done this report what the nature of this sample was, and she read, I was asked
this,
to read my book.
This is she, the psychologist?
The psychologist, right.
Yeah.
She said that, first of all, no psychological explanation of these experiences, if they were invented. None of them, no explanation was forthcoming from the test results. None of the requisite psychopathology was present with any of the people. And she said, furthermore, that if they had had these experiences, one might very much expect this sort of pattern to emerge. She said, very much like a rape victim who has a lowered self-esteem, hesitancy to trust, a lack of trust in one's own body, etc., etc. So she said that that doesn't prove, of course, that the experiences were real, but she said if they did have these experiences, one should expect to find this kind of result. So it all checked out as nicely as one could imagine.
Charlotte, what are your comments here? Were any of those characteristics apply to you? Do you have... no one wants to say in public that she has low self-esteem.
I was extremely shy as a child, you know, to the point where I would hide when relatives came into the house. Extremely shy. I probably grew out of it when I was in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that is because of it or because of the isolated way I grew up.
But your psychologist wouldn't suggest to you that that is the kind of personality who might seek something to draw attention to himself or herself.
That... I suppose could be said, like a rape victim who would do the same thing, possibly. for the same reason. But of the 120-some people I've worked with, I've had two allow their names to be used.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, and she found this very strongly with all of them, have a great degree of shame about the experience.
Well, we're not. Charlotte Brown is not Charlotte Brown's name.
Yes, that's right.
Enough. And this is, I guess that's part of it. But part of it is people laugh at you when you're telling the story.
That is not for my concern. That's for my family. I'd rather not embarrass them.
but there is a connotation. There is a connotation of embarrassment.
Peter, in one case, a very macho army officer was abducted in this case I worked with, and he was 6'2", and he had this idea he was going to escape. And he told me that when he was taken off the table, he was simply unable to do anything. He had no will. He couldn't move. And this little tiny figure with a gray, long gray fingers reached up and took him by the wrist and turned him very lightly, and he just went with the figure. And he said, you know, Bud, I was the giant in that room, but I was the baby.
Wow.
Now, in terms of people wanting to draw attention to themselves through this kind of story, this is not the kind of attention...
No. I got taken off by a little guy. I think I could put it in my hand.
Yeah.
Stan, set this in, I keep using the word context, but just give me the, catch me up generally on where the UFO world is now. And this way, too, why don't I hear about this? Why am I not hearing about this pattern of, whether or not one believes it, there are a heck of a lot of questions here that are fascinating to ask and be answered. Why don't I see these stories? Why don't I hear that?
I think what we're dealing with is a complex thing. First of all, there is plenty going on. When I used to get a clipping service every month, there'd be 40 pages of sightings, mostly from small-town papers. The wire services just didn't cover the story adequately or often. Secondly, it's not news anymore. Third, there has been a reluctance. There's what I call the, you'll pardon the expression, but the David Susskind syndrome. I once flew to New York from California to do a show with David, and it was a waste of time, but more than that, between the segments, he said that, there's nothing in the New York Times that says these things are real, so they must not be. And I had a big, long thing that did make the papers with the Globe and Mail, which simply refused to consider the facts with regard to flying saucers, you know, our national paper. So that the research that's going on, kind of work that Bud described, the kind of stuff that I've been doing with digging out the truth about the cosmic Watergate.
What's the truth about the cosmic Watergate?
Sorry to drop that on you.
no Susskind here.
The fact of the matter is that there's an enormous amount of data, documents released from the government, some that aren't released, and they're interesting too, that clearly indicate that the government of the United States, and undoubtedly of Canada and many other countries, has been well aware that some UFOs are indeed extraterrestrial spacecraft since at least 1947, when one crashed outside Roswell, New Mexico, was picked up, and a statement was made by the Army Air Force that indeed they had one now. This is less than 2 weeks after the big noise began about saucers in June of 1947. And I'm very curious whether Charlotte's experience was before or after June, but...
after.
After, okay, that's good. Anyway, since that time, it's been clear that this subject has been considered of enormous significance. It's clear that there's a small central group in both countries, apparently, in Canada and the United States, and presumably in England as well, based on recent things that have been released, that has known for a very long time what's going on. And as some of those people die, they are replaced by other key people at the very highest levels. The younger generation, which was never alive when there wasn't a space program, would immediately take the position that we should be looking at ourselves, instead of as Canadians or Americans or Russians or Chinese or whatever, as Earthlings. Because obviously from their viewpoint, an alien viewpoint, and our kids' viewpoint...
Who cares what team you play for?
That's right. We are all Earthlings.
Yeah.
And there's the rub. I don't know of any government on this planet that wants its citizens to owe their primary allegiance to the planet instead of that individual country. Nationalism's the only game in town.
But I want to bring this right back to Charlotte, if I can. Do those cosmic concerns affect you, or do you think about the meaning of what happened to you, or what?
I definitely think there has been a cover-up. I don't think it's going to do much good in the long run. I do feel personally that they are going to be here for some time, that they are...
This is the aliens.
The aliens. That there is going to be a joint future eventually.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're just flying by. I think they've come to visit.
Is that something they told you or something you just feel?
That is something they told me.
That oh.
They would be... I think what it really was is they would be here for assistance, and they do seem to feel that we will need it.
Here?
As an Earth. Earth's not doing herself much
good. What do they want from us?
I don't know whether they want anything. I think unless we are polluting the universe as well as our own our own world.
Charlotte,
I think they're concerned about what we're doing with the bombs and things.
May I ask you a question, Charlotte?
Sure.
Do you have children?
Three.
Uh-huh. Have you ever had any reason to believe that any of your children has ever had an experience?
No.
Mm-hmm. Why, but is it sometimes it's happened within the same family more than once?
The pattern that it's one of the main things I've been exploring lately, that I have now 15 separate family situations where in one case across three generations, actually in two cases across three generations, there's been an abduction across the bloodline of a particular family. And there is an enormous reason to believe that some sort of genetic study or genetic experimentation is taking place. There are lots of reasons to believe that sperm and ova samples have been taken. It all sounds totally off the wall, but this is what we're running into more and more times. And again, we don't know what it means. We have no idea of...
Is your theory here, Bud and Stan, is the theory here that this is one set of aliens from one different whatever, planet, galaxy, universe, but this is something different in kind? Is that it, Stan?
Well, I think we don't know whether all these guys come from the same place or whether there's an organization, a local galactic federation intelligence agency that's doing what's going on.
One thing, Peter, just to put in, Alan Hynek...
I have to warn you, Bud and Stan and Charlotte, that we're very close to out of time.
Okay. Alan Hynek used to have a very great slide of an elderly Chinese, a Scandinavian woman, and a primitive African, and with a bone in his nose, and the caption said, "Do you suppose they're all from the same planet?" So the descriptions we're getting here are very similar, but we don't really have a way of answering that.
I get your point. Let me just try one final question. I haven't thought about this subject for a long time, and I am pleased to have had this opportunity. But Stan Friedman, I'll put this one to you. What am I going to do with my friends this afternoon who say, Zosky, you've been on Morningside, and you're talking about UFOs? What am I going to say to them? And you know, because you have to live your whole life trying to make people convince, believe that you're serious.
Peter, tell them that they're dealing with the cream of the crop. All the surveys have shown that not only that a majority of people do believe that some UFOs are extraterrestrial spacecraft, but the greater the education, the more likely to believe. So the notion of the little old ladies in tennis shoes with an eighth grade education are the people who either see UFOs or believe in them. That's absolute balderdash. So you're in good company.
Well, I may not be in that company yet, Stan. I'm just asking the questions here.
If you get approached, what I'm saying is...
If I get approached, ha-ha.
By your friends, not by the aliens. We're not dealing with the mythology that, it's kooks and quacks. We're not dealing with that there is no date. In my lectures, I cover five large-scale scientific studies. There's an enormous amount of information that most people are unaware of. That's why I lecture so much. To get the data out on the table. We're dealing with the story of the millennium. Now, sometimes it's treated like Alice's Tea Party, fortunately not today. But it is something to get people thinking about, which is one of my major goals, and I'm sure is one of Bud's.
Absolutely.
I thank you all.
Pleasure. You.
Bud Hopkins has been in New York, Stan Friedman in Fredericton, here in Toronto, a woman we have called Charlotte Madden. Thank you.